It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday the 19th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. One of the big ideas from President Obama's last week of cybersecurity announcements was a plan for cyber war games between the U.S. and the U.K. It might be the first international exercise of its kind, the goal being a joint learning experience about how both governments can defend against an attack on their financial systems. It'll happen sometime this year. The private sector already does this, so how will it be different? Nova Safo reports.
If private sector cyber attack simulations are like fire drills, then the government cyber war games are fire prevention. That's according to Joe Loomis, CEO of Cyberspons.
Government is more interested in infiltration and defensiveness than it is about process and remediation.
The latter, Loomis says, is what his company and others in the private sector do.
As soon as you're attacked, what are you going to do first? What data are you going to collect? How are we going to communicate if the network's compromised?
Loomis says there are still not enough companies running simulations.
Companies have been doing terribly because they haven't been testing.
Bruce Schreier is chief technology officer for cybersecurity firm Co3 Systems. He says Target, Home Depot, Sony, and others have been caught off guard by recent attacks.
So I think companies are realizing that this has been a hole in their security.
Global spending on all information security is expected to grow 8% this year to $77 billion. The cost of digital crime is estimated in the hundreds of billions. In New York, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
We've been talking a lot about how the net neutrality debate might play out over the coming few weeks. And as expected, Republicans have drafted legislation that might head off the Federal Communications Commission at the pass when it comes to regulating how internet service providers deliver data from websites to customers. The legislation does seem to ban blocking lawful content and also so-called fast lane deals, where a company like Netflix might pay extra to get its movies delivered to you faster than those on YouTube. But the proposed changes would make it harder for the FCC to put ISPs under heavy scrutiny and heavier regulation. One of the strangest court cases to ever hinge on the internet is currently underway. It's about the alleged head of a difficult-to-access website called the Silk Road, which became one of the most popular international marketplaces for illegal drugs, weapons, and even hit jobs. Online, the name of the website's founder and leader was the Dread Pirate Roberts. The real man on trial is a 30-year-old guy named Ross Ulbricht. The case will likely be a long one, but there's already been plenty of courtroom drama. Sarah Jiang is a tech policy journalist who has been following the case. Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Tell me about the secret agent who's kind of an essential witness in this case and about how he discovered Silk Road.
Well, he was the first witness for the prosecution. He was not only intercepting packages of cocaine at O'Hare Airport, but he also was just on the internet looking at the Silk Road, taking screen caps, and he was able to convince one of the users to sort of hand over her account to law enforcement and let him impersonate her.
Let me just ask you this. One of the interesting parts about the way that this was all discovered was that the photos on the Silk Road matched the actual packages that were being intercepted, right?
So it wasn't quite clear how well these things matched up. The slips of paper that were like in the photographs would often like be in the packages. So, you know, they would match those up. But it's not like he knew for sure that they were coming through the Silk Road.
Part of the defense's position here is that law enforcement originally thought that Dread Pirate Roberts, or the person really behind Silk Road, was actually Mark Karpeles, who ran that doomed Bitcoin exchange, Mt. Gox.
I mean, the timeline is very odd. The same DHS agent who was undercover as a Silk Road moderator, just less than 2 months before he participated in arresting Ross Ulbricht, he swore in an affidavit that he had probable cause to believe that Mark Karpeles, the CEO of Mt. Gox, was Dread Pirate Roberts. Like, that is really strange.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, the reasons why he thought Mark Karpeles was Dread Pirate Roberts aren't really super compelling. SilkRoadMarket.org and this other domain that's owned by Mark Karpeles are hosted at the same place and registered by the same company. But Mark Karpeles literally runs a hosting company. It doesn't really bear out.
What has struck you about this case, which it just feels like a really unique case for the moment that we live in where things like the dark web exist?
It is really unique. It's also very nostalgic. A lot of this stuff was actually predicted back in the late 80s, early 90s, but by like kind of a fringe group that didn't really necessarily catch on.
What's this group?
You can call them kind of crypto anarchists. They congregated around this mailing list called the Cypherpunks mailing list. They speculated about things like assassination black markets. It's just kind of really far out stuff, stuff that's actually like, you know, goes further than the Silk Road ever went.
And it's really, really interesting to think of all this and go back to the detail that Ulbricht was arrested in the science fiction section of the San Francisco Library.
Yeah, and also the fact that he allegedly went by Dread Pirate Roberts, which is from a book and a movie. All of this stuff doesn't quite seem real.
Sarah Jiang is a tech policy journalist. She's reporting on the Silk Road case for Forbes. Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And here's a good story for you. A pizza guy delivered $42 of food to a car dealership. They gave him $50. He assumed the rest was a tip, but it wasn't. And they called him and made him come back to deliver the change. A video of the awkward interaction went viral. The resulting GoFundMe page to get him some more tips raised $20,000 in the first 2 days. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.